mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, State Representative Ty Matthews discusses his committee assignments in the Ohio House and shares his thoughts on the governor's budget proposal that is now up for debate in the legislature. Also this morning, in our continuing series of crime prevention conversations, neighborhood block watch programs are among the most well-established tools for crime prevention and, even after more than 50 years, still among the most effective. And it may be one of the best ideas ever to help an often overlooked and underserved group of young people. The Dick and Jane McCleary Fund for Homeless and Foster Youth, established through the Community Foundation. We'll learn more. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, February 20th, 2025. Yes, it is a snowy start to your Thursday, but here is the good news. Spring break is right around the corner, and that means lots of people are going to be looking to get away for some fun and relaxation and some warm weather, right? So where is everyone going for spring break this year? According to Expedia, they are out with their list of top destinations and the prices that you can expect to pay. According to their list, the most popular U.S. destination for spring break this year is Orlando, which I think is probably pretty standard. I think just about every year, Orlando is at or near the top of the list, which is kind of interesting because when I think of spring break, I think of going to the beach, you know, and not a whole lot of beaches in Orlando. It's in the middle of Florida, not on the coast, either coast. Anyway, Orlando, number one, followed by Las Vegas, Miami, L.A., and New York. The top international destination is Cancun, followed by Tokyo and Punta Cana. But the like most things these days, you should expect to pay more for your spring break vacation this year. Hopper reports that the average plane ticket for March and April will set you back $280, which is up 4% from last year, although airfare will be even higher if you are traveling right around Easter or Passover. And for those trips, prices will be 33% higher than earlier in the spring break season, say in March. So there's a big premium to travel at Easter time. And if you don't want to spend even more, you need to book your flight no later than February 24th for March travel, or book within the next 3 to 6 weeks for April travel. Generally speaking, earlier the better. As for hotels, spring breakers should expect to spend on average about $260 a night, with prices about 22% higher for Friday and Saturday stays. And here too, just like with your plane tickets, hotels will be more expensive during the Passover and Easter weekends. So that's what you need to know about your spring break trip, because waking up this morning, probably a lot of folks thinking about spring break. Absolutely. The good news is it's cold here this morning. And I say that's good news because if it were too much warmer, this snow that we got overnight would have been much heavier. It would have been, you know, just a real mess. This is the kind of the light stuff. So it's real easy to clear off your car or what have you. But it's still an annoyance. So is what it is. By the way, speaking of beaches, if you are thinking a beach getaway for spring break, TripAdvisor has ranked Siesta Beach, Siesta Key, Florida, as the number one beach in the U.S. and the fourth best in the world, but number one in the U.S. Let's see here. Globally, there are beaches in Greece, Thailand, and Aruba that were ranked higher, but Siesta Beach, Siesta Key, Florida, pretty highly ranked even Around the world, the White Sand Beach on Sarasota County's Gulf Coast ranked 9th in the world last year, up from number 11 in 2023. So it is trending in the right direction. Every year, the travel website TripAdvisor ranks the best beaches around the world based on reviews and ratings from its users. So, Siesta Beach in Florida, that is the best in the world. But you know that because it's among the best in the world and the best in the U.S., it's going to be crowded. So if you're looking to avoid the crowds, that's probably not the place to go. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember back in January, the stories about the number of people who would be looking for new jobs this year. There were some rankings or some surveys that said as many as half of all workers going to be looking for a new job in 2025. Well, if that is you, the team at resume.io analyzed search data from 170 countries to uncover the most popular dream jobs. What would your dream job be? And believe it or not, the number one most sought after profession in the United States, what do you think it would be? I'll promise you, you won't guess this. Real estate agent. Of all things, real estate agent, the most sought after profession in the U.S., according to the search data. Also number one in Canada and South Africa. Real estate agent. Meanwhile, model is the number one job search in Sweden, Finland, and Romania. Job seekers aspire to be models. Let's see here. Globally, the most popular dream job with 1.3 million global searches annually, pilot, the world's top dream job, which does seem like it'd be kind of a glamorous profession. You'd always be traveling, always see new things. Pilot, number one internationally. And I thought this was kind of interesting. In Japan, the most desired job, the most dreamed about job, the most searched job, fortune teller. Fortune teller, okay. And in Kenya, they dream of being pro skaters, professional skaters. It's number one, so, yeah. All right. Well, I can see that in Kenya. They probably don't have a whole lot of ice, you know, places where they can be pro skaters. So that would be a very exotic job for people in Kenya, I would think. But, yeah, real estate agent in the United States. I would not have guessed that. Let's see. This is a big story. And we've been following this now since the first of the year. And the news just keeps getting worse and worse. You know how we always have to have a doom and gloom story. You know, a world is coming to an end, we're all going to die story. Well, here, this one is back again, and the numbers are even worse than they were before, which are even worse than they were before that. According to NASA, now there is a 3.1 chance that the asteroid 2024 YR4 will strike Earth in 2032. December of 2032. That is an increase from the February estimate of 2.3%, the earlier the estimate earlier this month of 2.3% chance of contact, and that is up from the 1% estimation when they first announced the discovery of this asteroid back at the end of December. The asteroid is 130 to 300 feet wide. So about the size of a football field, and that is large enough, they say, to wipe out an entire city if it does strike Earth. In the unlikely event that this asteroid is on an impact trajectory, the impact would occur somewhere along a risk corridor, which extends across the eastern Pacific Ocean, northern South America, the Atlantic Ocean, Africa, the Arabian Sea, and South Asia, according to NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. But it just keeps getting worse. It was a 1% chance. Now there was 2% chance. Now it's a 3.1% chance that this asteroid is going to strike us. And it would be December 22nd, 2032 is the date that they project, that their mathematical scientists say is the doomsday date for this asteroid. December 20th, that would ruin Christmas. Actually, I look at that December 22nd, that's my anniversary, 2032. I would be potentially off the hook for an anniversary gift. So, wow, that just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. But there is good news. If you are looking for a little good news, I will share this. It looks like we are getting some relief in our Eggmageddon situation. Turkey is exporting some 15,000 tons of eggs to the U.S. Thank you, Turkey. The nation of Turkey exporting some 15,000 tons of eggs to the U.S. Deliveries will start this month and continue through July, according to Turkish officials. U.S. egg producers hope the imports will help ease some of the pressure on domestic egg prices. So there is some egg relief coming. That may be the best news we hear all day today. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Cloudy today with a chance of snow and a high in the 20s. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-teens. The Findlay Police Department is remembering a fallen officer today. It was on February 20th, 1898, that policeman William Holly was shot and killed while he and another officer were chasing two burglary suspects. One of the suspects opened fire on policeman Holly, killing him. Both suspects were arrested and charged with murder. The police department says it remembers Officer Holly for his ultimate sacrifice for the safety and protection of the citizens of Findlay. Holly's name is represented on the local memorial at the Fort Findlay Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 20 on Romick Parkway, and also at the Officer Down Memorial page, as well as all of the officers and troopers in Hancock County who have died in the line of duty. Get more on Officer Holly and the local memorial to fallen officers in this story on our website. Some relief could be on the way to help Ohio parents with child care costs.
Senate Bill 32 would create the Child Care CRED program. It would divide the cost of child care equally among employees, employers, and the state. The goal here is to help companies attract and retain talent by helping with child care expenses and providers. According to the state budget documents, the child tax credit would be refundable, and some portion would be available to parents with a joint income of $94,000 or less.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Applications are being accepted for the 2025-26 Hancock Youth Leadership Program. Affiliated with the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce, officials say Hancock Youth Leadership is an investment in the future of Findlay and Hancock County. The purpose of the program is to enhance knowledge and develop leadership skills in a select group of high school students, motivating them to become positive role models, active and committed to their civic responsibilities. Students will attend monthly sessions beginning with a team-building retreat in August. Get more details about Hancock Youth Leadership and a link to the application in this story on our website. Remember, you can always give more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Get to our cover story this morning. State Representative Ty Matthews is with us in the studio. And the last time we spoke, the committee assignments had not been handed out yet. Now they have. So talk a little bit about some of the committees that you are a part of. Probably the one where you have the biggest opportunity to set the agenda and move forward. Your priorities would be in the Veterans and Military Development Committee, where you are actually vice chair.
Yeah, that's correct. And good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Really excited about the current committee structure. Speaker Huffman did narrow it down a little bit, less committees, really more focused on topics. You know, when he asked us, where do you want to sit?
Mm-hmm.
I know last time we talked, it's everyone says finance, right?
Right.
But he asked us, you know, what topics do you want to work on that you're, that you have some type of subject matter expertise on, mm-hmm. and that you're passionate about? And that's how he paired us up. So currently I'm on development, which focuses on the housing issues. You know, how do we bring jobs into areas? So kind of an economic development mm-hmm. committee.
Right.
Natural resources. So that's pretty a wide, you know, wide one. We talk about oil, water, division of wildlife. So mm-hmm. really passionate about that. I'm a sportsman myself, and
yeah.
really glad I get to sit on that committee with Marathon on our backyard. You know, mm-hmm. so we kind of overlap with energy with many of our topics there.
Mm-hmm.
And then innovation and technology, another part of something I'm really passionate about with some of the policy I'm pushing, and kind of bleeds into the committee that I'm vice chair of, Veteran Affairs and the Military Development.
Yeah.
When we were talking to the chair, Tracy Richardson, on developing the name of the committee, you know, I really had a passion to, let's not just talk about the typical veteran issues. We have a lot of infrastructure here in Ohio to make Ohio a truly military-friendly state.
Yeah, you've talked about that a number of times.
Yeah, and you know, when I mean friendly, I'm even talking about jobs, right? We've seen, I think it was last month, the announcement of Anduril, a large drone manufacturer that will be creating 4,000 jobs in the Columbus area with an average salary of $132,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was something that I've been looking at for a while. You know, when I was in Iraq, we sell their products out there. They are truly forward thinking on what the next steps of, you know, what next era of warfare really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do believe here in Ohio, and specifically Northwest Ohio, we can really tap into those companies. There's some companies already here. They just need a little bit of attention. And so being vice chair of that committee, that's really what I hope to do, is yeah. we're developing policy right now. I've got a couple bills that have been drafted. We're tweaking them. Looking forward to presenting those to see what we can bring here to Northwest Ohio.
You also are, in fact, on the Finance Committee. So you yeah. did end up on
somewhat. Committee. So I will sub once. So I subbed this week on that. I don't know if that's going to be continuing, if I'll be a sub on that. But yeah, it's kind of funny how that did turn out. I did sit on finance this week. So.
So I wanted to ask, I mean, obviously, veterans and military development is right up your alley, given your experience and your background. Of the others that you mentioned, which are the ones that you feel that you have the most to contribute naturally, and which is the one where you feel like you have the most to learn?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, naturally, I think, not to be punny, natural resources, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a very, you know, if anyone knows my family around the county, we're big hunters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really passionate about that with the current issues with CWD, chronic wasting disease, mm-hmm. To the south of us here in Hancock County and Hardin. They're facing that, you know, where there's kill permits out. So really interested in how do we preserve the herds, but also, you know, the farmers, they've been having issues with the deer and, you know, wildlife, you know, taking their crops. So
mm-hmm.
really, really like those issues. But looking at development and tech, you know, I didn't think that the policy I was working on would really bleed it into those, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, besides natural resources, what I think I'm going to be able to contribute most to, depending where those bills end up, which could end up in development or in innovation and tech,
mm-hmm.
I think these policy pieces, what I'm calling the Ohio Defense Initiative, is going to contribute a lot to that. But to be honest, the one that's, I think, a little broader and where I could learn and have a, you know, a lot, there's a lot going on down there to learn, right,
mm-hmm.
Is development, right?
Yeah.
You focus on, we had the director of insurance, you know, yesterday in, you know, briefing us, and, you know, that's a whole universe in itself, insurance policy,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
seeing how that all, you know, feeds into development, there's definitely issues in development that I will have to, you know, sit down and buckle down and get the books out.
Obviously, one of the, and we knew this going in, one of the top priorities for the new legislature is the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
The governor has proposed his budget, and I'm interested in your thoughts because, again, now it shifts to the legislature to tweak that, to craft their own versions, and there's a lot that has to be done before the budget is finalized. But within the governor's proposed budget, there were a number of, this was one of the first things that jumped out at me, a number of tax increase mm-hmm. proposals on the state's tobacco tax, gambling, increasing the gambling tax, recreational marijuana, which I don't know if that was necessarily in the budget, but I know it's in the legislation that the state Senate is fast-tracking mm-hmm. To revise the structure, the tax structure on recreational marijuana. All of those are easy taxes. Because they're so-called sin taxes, they're easy taxes, but they are in fact tax increases. Is that something that you can support?
You know, I'm not quite sure yet. I think maybe there's certain ones in that I could be convinced. You know, as once the governor handed over the budget to us, you know, now we're kind of peeling all that back.
Mm-hmm.
We have been receiving a lot of calls on the sports gambling tax increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
So something to consider there. We have not, to my knowledge, met as a caucus since, you know, that's been released to really flesh out, you know, people's stances on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing we've been talking about with the transportation budget, you know, is it's a balancing act, right? You know, I do feel like the legislature, we have a goal of cutting taxes. You know, we are looking at property taxes, right? The mm-hmm. income tax. And one of the things that I'm waiting for is there's probably about closing in on 20 bills on property tax reform,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, when we're hearing people's complaints on your taxes, it's right now it's largely on the property tax.
Property
right?
taxes,
but there's so many different ways people are carving this up that I'm kind of waiting to see where are the lead horses in this race before I start pushing that message in the district, because
mm-hmm.
there's just a wide swath of solutions on that.
It's kind of interesting talking about lowering the tax burden on Ohioans. One of the governor's proposals, and it involved the tobacco tax, increasing mm-hmm. the tobacco tax to pay for an increased child tax credit for Ohioans on their state taxes. Again, it's an easy thing mm-hmm. to support, but generally speaking, and history bears this out, when you raise taxes on tobacco, you end up with fewer people using tobacco
right.
products. So if that's what's going to fund the tax break for Ohio families, you know, that at some point, those numbers aren't going to add up.
I totally agree with you on this, Chris. It's even with, you know, I'm not a partaker in, you know, any type of cannabis products, but, you know, you look up into Michigan, you look at the taxes, right? If we raise taxes mm-hmm. on that, do Ohio companies that we receive tax revenue from become uncompetitive with their Michigan counterparts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also with the, I was talking about the CWD issue. We're planning on right now the Division of Wildlife wants to raise the permit price per non-resident deer hunter in the state, right? And, you know, what comes to mind? Well, if we're killing off all these deer, you know, through CWD, is that going to kind of counteract what we're trying to do? And kind of relay that back to what you just said about, you know, these taxes. And
mm-hmm.
I am traditionally, I'm just overall, I think we should be slashing taxes across the board, right? Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think this could make us uncompetitive. You know, I think it's, you get in a room, you start brainstorming, and there's a lot of good idea fairies, I call them, right? And I will say this. With looking at cutting the legislature, you know, mm-hmm. from our perspective, knowing our conversations, some of the policy that I have that I'm going to introduce is, you know, if we're going to be talking about all these tax increases or decreases, what are we doing with the size of government, right? If, like you said, there's two pots, you know, there's two things going on right now. If you're going to cut mm-hmm. down tax revenue, there's
yeah.
the services are going to be affected, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the bills that I am working on right now is, I'm calling it kind of the Ohio version of DOGE. It's more so a shared services committee where I'm hoping that we can take time. It's similar to something we already have with the Sunset committee where we look at occupational licensing and, you know, is this actually needed in an industry? But looking at redundant government programs, you know,
mm-hmm.
what government programs are needed, what's kind of just been there a while that we don't really need anymore, and maybe we don't have to axe it completely, but hey, you know, there's there's another agency doing something very similar. How about we combine these? Because, you know, if we're going to cut taxes and keep cutting taxes, it's going to impact services.
At some point.
At some point. Yeah. And, you know, my response to that, sorry, I'm rambling on a little bit here, is what I'm really realizing in Columbus, Chris, is, you know, even on the, this isn't a Republican-Democrat thing. This is kind of just a personal thing, is what is your true view of what government's role is in your everyday life?
Mm-hmm. There will be many more of these discussions as the budget process plays itself out. Also, wanted to talk a little bit about the education component of that. And obviously, there are issues about funding of public education versus private vouchers and so on. So we will save that for another time, because that is a whole conversation.
Yeah, that could take a 30 minutes here. Yeah.
But we will revisit this topic, to be sure. Again, State Representative Ty Matthews with us this morning, talking about his committee assignments and thoughts on the governor's budget proposal and early stages of that process. Ty, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it.
This morning, another in our ongoing series of crime prevention conversations. Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning. Talk about neighborhood block watch programs, which are among the most well-established tools for crime prevention. And even after more than 50 years since the first of these were started back in the 70s, still among the most effective. Brian, thanks for dropping by.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me today.
How long has this been a thing? Like I said, I think the first block watch programs were started back in the early 70s. How far did they date back here?
Yeah, so if you go back to the history of Block Watch or Neighborhood Watch, they're pretty much
the
same thing.
By different names, yeah.
Yep. The concept started back in the 1960s, and it really formed in 1972 with the Sheriff's Association, National Sheriff's Association. Here in Findlay, we have actually had a Block Watch program since about 1982.
Okay. Yeah. And again, it is still a thing.
It is.
For a number of years. I mean, this was like you heard about it all the time.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily talk about it as much these days. And maybe that's because so many things are done online and we share information. I know I have one of the Ring doorbells and I get alerts, you know, neighborhood alerts, you know, that way. Or we share things on social media about I've seen this or be on the lookout for that.
Correct.
But still, the Neighborhood Block Watch program is an effective tool.
Yeah, the concept of Block Watch or Neighborhood Watch, whichever you use, is to watch out for neighbors, right? Basically keeping an eye on everyone's stuff and making sure everyone's being safe. Now, it's all about information. And in today's world of technology, everyone gets their information online.
Right.
That is still a great component for Neighborhood Watch, but still that one-on-one information that you get from the police department as well as your neighbors is helpful. For instance, if someone goes out and discovers their car is broken into, they may or may not report that to the police department, and they may keep that information to themselves. Whereas if they are part of a Block Watch program, they are now reporting that back to their general neighborhood, right? And people know, hey, I need to lock my doors. I need to keep an eye out.
Yeah. And it's still a good idea to let law enforcement know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's always good to let us know. Just a lot of times people, they feel like, well, I'm not going to bother law enforcement with this. They're not going to be able to figure out who it was. Yeah. It was something small, a little bit of change, right?
Yeah. But again, this helps you detect trends.
Know where the problems are, correct.
Yeah. So how does a program get started? I mean, how many of these are in neighborhoods in our area?
Yeah, so we have about 28 different block watches here on the books in Findlay. Now, all those represent different kind of geographical areas of the city, and each watch kind of determines how big that they want it to be. Now, the idea of block watch, right, is just our general block. That's kind of where that term came from. But some are bigger, some are smaller, some are entire areas. And even though we have 28 different watches, that doesn't mean that every 28 watch meets on a regular basis. Some just meet up when they need to. Some don't involve law enforcement at all, because that's one of the misnomers about block watch, is that it is a police department program. Really, it's not.
Yeah.
It is a community program. It is up to that individual watch to decide kind of how they handle things.
Yeah.
Our segment is we come in, give an update on what we're seeing in their particular area with mm-hmm. Crime trends and reports. Mm-hmm. And also, one of the things I like to do is offer some kind of training element, right?
Such as, you know, what are some examples?
A common one would be scams, especially this time of year. IRS scams, they start to fire up, right, because everyone's in tax season. So we kind of update people on these are the scams that we have seen in Findlay. These are some of the reports, right? Kind of go over the details of how people fall for these types of scams and mm-hmm. what to look out for. That's just one example.
Yeah.
Another one is just a general block watch orientation of, hey, this is a suspicious activity. This is what to look out for. This is what to report.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine being able to offer some advice on how to make your neighborhoods less attractive to criminal activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a large component. You know, lighting. Lighting is one of those things that dissuades a lot of would-be criminals because they don't want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Security cameras, like you talked about with your doorbell,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Although a lot of criminals these days are kind of savvy and covering faces and things like that, but that's where that immediate detection comes in. If someone does see something, report it, right?
Yeah.
That way it gets us on the way.
Yeah. And especially as we're coming into spring when people are, you know, working outside of their homes, some of the things that they can do, like, you know, the lighting or, you know, landscaping that
yep.
can either help or hinder.
Help. Yeah. Yeah. I like to talk about, you know, midnight shift driving around middle of the night. They're kind of looking for criminal activity going on. But mm-hmm. if your bushes and shrubs are so high that people can hide behind them,
right.
makes it really tough to kind of see that person.
Right. And it's interesting. You mentioned one of the things that you can do when you, you know, make the rounds with the neighborhood watch programs is to give updates on where the trouble spots are.
Correct, yeah.
Again, that information is only as good as what is reported to you, even if it seems minor.
That's correct. And even if someone's not part of a neighborhood watch program, they can obtain a lot of this information from our Citizen Connect, which is on our website.
Mm-hmm.
That basically pulls all the information from these reports to show
yeah.
where these crime trends are happening.
You know, the other component to this, and this is maybe not directly, but indirectly from the neighborhood watch programs or the block watch programs, is that sense of community.
Correct.
And there are so many benefits to that. But, you know, we've talked before that, you know, strong neighborhoods, strong communities are beneficial in so many different ways.
Correct. And that is something that we are truly lacking in today's time of technology, mm-hmm. right? If we yeah. dial it back to the 1960s before, you know, we had cell phones, before we had the internet, before
right.
we had a lot of TV, right? TV was pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
What were people doing? Kind of hanging out outside, right?
Yeah.
Talking with neighbors and on porches. And that was that communication link.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's from a law enforcement standpoint, it's a good thing. From just a community standpoint, it's a good thing.
Absolutely, it is.
So if someone is interested in forming a neighborhood watch program or a block watch program, how do they go about doing that? As you mentioned,
yep.
you can do it on your own. It's not necessarily
correct.
A police department program. However, I would imagine
absolutely.
You can help.
Yeah, the benefit of pairing up with law enforcement is that we do offer Block Watch ID numbers, which is kind of an anonymous way to report activity.
Okay.
A lot of times people are fearful of retaliation. If I call my neighbor across the street, they're going to know who called and they're going to do something to my house, right? Kind of those things.
Mm.
This is an anonymous way where these people are vetted to kind of know what to report and what not to report, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there is that training component and that handoff with law enforcement. A lot of times people, they don't want to call dispatch because they just don't know what they're going to get. This is another avenue where, you know, they have that friendly connection with the police department.
Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in learning more or starting a program, how do people get that ball rolling?
Sure. They can contact me. My number is 419-424-7282. They can also email me or just contact our website, go through there. There's multiple ways that they can kind of reach out to us. One of the first things that I recommend is kind of check with their neighbors and see if there is an interest in starting this up, because just one person doesn't really do a lot of good as far mm-hmm. as a block watch program goes.
I would imagine, though, once a program kind of gets started and you start to see results, it does tend to grow.
Correct.
Over time.
Correct. Yeah, we have a couple neighborhoods where they had, you know, a lot of times what happens is there's some kind of immediate problem.
Mm.
For instance, a drug house, that's probably the most common reason
yeah.
that gets things started. But
yeah.
once they see the benefits of sharing information.
Yeah.
The program keeps on evolving.
Yeah. Again, they've been around for more than a half century, still among the most effective tools that we have for crime prevention in our neighborhoods, these neighborhood block watch programs. And we have a link up for more information about it on our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net. And again, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning. Brian, thanks very much.
Hey, thanks again for having me.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So first it was eggs that we were worried about, right? In the grocery store. We've got this problem with eggs. We don't have, and now we have to worry about bananas, apparently. This is a story out of New Hampshire where a venomous snake apparently hitched a ride from South America to New Hampshire in a bunch of bananas and wasn't discovered until the fruit was in stores this past Saturday. According to Lieutenant Adam Cheney of the police department, and I don't know where specifically in New Hampshire this was, Lieutenant Adam Cheney said, "We're lucky that one of the workers at the Market Basket store was very familiar with reptiles and recognized the snake and said, this could be a problem. Fortunately, no one was injured by the ornate cat-hide snake. Venomous snake hitched a ride from South America. The animal was successfully relocated and has now found a new home with the Animal Rescue Service Rainforest Reptile Shows." So, first it was the eggs, now it's the bananas we got to worry about. Oh, man. The grocery store is an adventure these days. Speaking of eggs, more people trying to smuggle eggs across the border of Mexico due to the bird flu outbreak. Never mind the drug smugglers and things like that. Now they're smuggling eggs across the border. Authorities say that there was a 29% increase in eggs being confiscated at ports of entry between October of last year and the month of February of this year, compared with the same time period a year prior. 29% increase in the number of contraband eggs being smuggled across the border, or attempted to be smuggled across. They've been confiscated. This comes as the price of eggs in the U.S. has surged, which has been attributed to an outbreak of bird flu that has caused chicken populations to decline. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the population of conventionally caged chickens has also gone down by 8%. So you got this egg shortage, and you got smugglers at the U.S.-Mexico border trying to smuggle in eggs. So let's make sure there are no venomous snakes that are a part of this. We don't need any of those. That's, By the way, speaking of eggs and such, a New Jersey woman is fighting a lawsuit to keep her emotional support chickens. It's not for the eggs. These are emotional support chickens. According to reports out of New Jersey, Lori Smith of Gloucester County has been sued by her homeowners association to get rid of the five birds that she keeps on her property, which she says help her with panic and anxiety attacks and post-traumatic stress. The association first brought a lawsuit against Ms. Smith and her husband a year ago. The initial lawsuit went against her and ordered a $50 fine for every day the chickens remained in her home. The couple decided to keep them, though, and they have continued the fight. They have actually been paying $50 each day with the help of a crowdfunding campaign set up by Ms. Smith's mother. They have also filed a counterclaim alleging discrimination by the Homeowners Association, by the HOA, And they are also accusing the HOA of causing emotional distress. The emotional support chickens. I would think, you know, if you want to settle this, the easiest way to do it would be to share the eggs with everyone in the neighborhood. I mean, you know, give them a break on their egg prices. Give them a little egg relief. They might look at that whole thing a little bit differently. You know, I'm just saying. I'm gonna make that suggestion. Has anyone thought of that? Let's see. A couple of other items in the broken news. Kind of a light day, actually, for the broken news this morning. Yesterday, we had some terrific stories. And today, not a whole lot. It's a little low-key. But we do have this, a follow-up to a previous story. You remember last month when we told you about the teenagers who were arrested after taking a subway train in New York on a joyride? Well, a follow-up to the story. One of the 15-year-olds that was originally charged with reckless endangerment and trespassing for that incident back in July is now accused of trying to take a subway train for a joyride in the Bronx for a second time. He's done it again. 15 years old. The latest incident happened on Tuesday at 160th Street and Prospect Avenue in Longwood. Police say a crew noticed the teen had entered a conductor's cab on a number 2 train, and they stopped him before he was able to take off this time. Police say he is one of the 6 teenagers that were charged with driving a train in Brooklyn last month. Some people never learn. He's trying to take a train. I still don't understand. It's a train. I mean, it's not like you can go anywhere with it. I mean, the authorities know where this train is going to end up. They know where to find you. So, you know that you were going to get arrested. I don't get it. And finally, in the broken news this morning, some craziness out of the state of California. And you think about California and all the things that they have to deal with right now, with the wildfires and the rainy season, possible mudslides. And, you know, they've got a lot on their plate in California. So what are they doing in the state legislature? Why, of course, they are about to become the first state to officially recognize a cryptid. Yes, that's a cryptid. If you don't know what a cryptid is, it is a mysterious creature with little evidence of existence. Assemblymember Chris Rogers has introduced a bill, AB 666, is what it is, to make Bigfoot or Sasquatch the state's official cryptid in California. Name Bigfoot the official cryptid of the state of California. A mysterious creature with little evidence of existence. Mr. Rogers represents one of the districts in Northern California that is known for Bigfoot sightings, although many believe that Oregon is the true home of the legendary creature. So he's fired a shot across the bow at their northern neighbors in Oregon, claiming Sasquatch or Bigfoot is the official cryptid of the state of California. So it is good to know that they have their priorities straight and they are working on the things that really matter in the state of California. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
A swing and a liner to right. That'll get down for a base hit. That'll score Ramirez. Naylor's coming right behind him. Scampering to third is Fry. And Brian Rocchio with a 2-run single to right.
Here are select schedule of spring training games, all leading up to the season opener on Thursday, March 27th at Kansas City. Your home of the Guardians is 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Weather like what we have today here in Northwest Ohio kind of makes you dream of just getting away from it all. And the average American, this is a new survey from Travel Binger, 2,000 adults, they asked, the average American would drop everything, quit their jobs, drop everything, and travel the world if they had $287,731 in the bank. It's a very specific number. The older you are, the more money you would have in order to be a nomad, just a globe hopper. Gen Zers would need $211,000 on average to quit their jobs and travel the world. Boomers would have to have $335,000 in the bank. Interestingly, 18% in the survey said that they would become world hopping nomads for less than 50 grand. That's all it would take. 50 grand, quit my job, just travel the world. 17% said that there is no figure at all that they could be paid that they would take to just go travel the world and do nothing else. And what would respondents do if they had like $1 million travel budget? I mean, if money was no object and you could travel anywhere, do anything, 37% say that they would take family and friends on a dream vacation. That's kind of nice. I hope that I am among your family and friends, if that's the case. 24% would road trip around the country. 4% said that if they received $1 million for travel, they would give it back because they aren't interested in traveling. Who are those 4%? So when I first heard about this, I thought, now this is something that we've got to highlight in the community because I think it may be one of the best ideas ever to help what is often an overlooked and underserved group of young people. I'm talking about the Dick and Jane McCleary Fund for Homeless and Foster Youth that has been established through the Community Foundation. And Jane McCleary is with us in the studio this morning. And Jane, talk a little bit about the inspiration for this idea. Where did this come from?
Well, I get very emotional talking about this. Mm-hmm. I've always cared about kids because I was an educator, yeah. I worked with the school psychologist and speech therapist, and we know there's a lot of kids in foster homes, and the foster parents do wonderful things, mm-hmm. but kids can only be in foster care till they're age 18,
right?
And that concerns us, and then Carla Benjamin from Welcome to a New Life did a presentation for one of the groups I was in, mm-hmm. and she told the story of a young man who a minister in a local church found in the parking lot, and he was crying. Mm. And the minister spoke to him, and he said, I've aged out of foster care, and I have nowhere to go.
And I have nowhere to go. This is and this was the thing that really spoke to me, because we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, and my parents were foster parents, were foster family for a number of years after I had actually left the house. So this wasn't when I was that age, but they had a number of kids that would come in, and I never realized until that time that once those kids hit 18, that's pretty much it. You know, they're done. The state is done taking care of you. They're done looking after you, and you're kind of left to fend on your own. And that is, I mean, just imagine that, for a child to, basically be completely on their own at age 18.
And that's how I felt, because when I turned 18, there was no way I was ready to go into the world. And yeah. I was so glad I was going to college, because it gave me a few more years to grow up. Mm-hmm. And I think of my grandsons, and would they be able to just find an apartment, get a job, get a car at 18? Mm-hmm. And it just spoke to me. And then at that meeting, Carla had brought along a young woman who had been incarcerated. And she was in the program and is doing wonderfully. She's mentoring other people who are being released from prison. And she spoke that day, too. And so I had mentioned that two ladies and myself are working on trying to do something for foster kids and homeless kids. And this gal who had spent time in jail said, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because from her experience being
that's
in prison,
yeah.
she knows that that's a problem.
Yeah.
And we know statistically that a lot of children who are just released into the world after being in foster care or uh-huh. homeless spend time incarcerated.
Yeah. That is the very definition of at-risk youth, at-risk
Absolutely.
Young people. Again, even though they're legally adults, they still... And again, we talk about the, you know, imagine, you know, being kind of turned out there on your own to the big bad world at the age of 18. That would be difficult even under the best of circumstances, with the best upbringing, with the best family structure and everything. It would still be a challenge. So for individuals who don't have that, man, that would be at you'd be such a disadvantage. So what do you hope to do through the fund? I mean, how do you hope to help?
Well, we know that these homeless youth and just a statistic that was shocking to me was that last year, Findlay High School had 87 homeless children mm-hmm. who were either sleeping in their cars or couch surfing in other people's homes.
Yeah.
My most recent statistic, and I'm working on another statistic, but August 8th, at that time, there were 24 homeless students before school started. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that number is up to what it was last year.
Yeah.
So what we want to do with this fund is provide, if a student is aging out of foster care or homeless, maybe they need a down payment on an apartment.
Okay.
Maybe they need a form of transportation and they need a down payment for that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they ride bicycles.
Yeah.
And we can buy them a bicycle. So the idea is that if they need something to get them started, a helping hand,
mm-hmm.
Basically the way the foundation works it is that they have connections with all the agencies in Hancock County.
Yeah.
And they can come to the foundation, say, I have somebody who needs this money, needs something to get them started.
So you can, so they can grant that money through the fund to those existing agencies
exactly,
to help out.
Exactly. And then they can manage it so that it's spent. You know, they're not just going to get $400 to buy a bicycle.
Yeah.
That's going to be managed by an agency who will make sure that it goes where it needs to go.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought.
Well, I mean, again, it can be something, you know, just that simple
mm-hmm.
that can make the difference between where do I go and what I do mm-hmm. to maybe just a glimmer of hope. There.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of my philosophy that I spoke to. He was a presenter, actually, and he had had a horrible life and was able to get beyond that. I said, what happened? How did you get to where you are today? He said, I had one person in my life who had faith in me.
Mm.
And that one person gave me the inspiration to keep going, to keep trying. Yeah. And I think everybody needs somebody who's going to believe in them mm-hmm. and encourage them.
Yeah.
And so in addition to the fund that my husband and I have started, we're trying, two ladies, Sue Friel and Mary Kay Combs, were looking at a way of maybe reaching out to these kids while they're still in school
mm-hmm.
and maybe doing some type of mentorship where they have kind of like Welcome to New Life, where you have somebody who's kind of a buddy.
Right.
You maybe go to their football games.
Help along that path.
Yes. And then along that way, as they gain confidence and they're comfortable with you, then you might be able to advise them like, hey, you know, have you thought about this? And one of the things with foster care is we do have a Bridges program in Ohio
mm-hmm.
that will provide support to these kids, but they've been in the system so long, so many of them, that they don't take advantage of it because there's very restrictions on what they can do.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they don't take advantage of it, where people like us, if they had a good adult mentor, and they felt comfortable with us,
yeah.
we could say, hey, you know, here's this program. Why don't you, let's take advantage of it. Let's look at it.
So this is the first part, and who knows where this goes from here. But the Dick and Jane McCleary Fund for Homeless and Foster Youth has been established through the Community Foundation, and folks can contribute to it now.
Absolutely.
And we have that link on our webpage at goodmornings.net. Like I said, I cannot think of a more worthy cause to help out, like we said, an often overlooked and underserved group of young people who are aging out of the system and yet still need that help to become the best them that they can be. Again, Jane McCleary with us this morning. Again, you can go to our webpage for more information. Jane, thanks so much.
Very welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Beyond 1%, Unleashing Your Potential Against All Odds, an inspiring evening with Brock Mueller coming up next week at St. Andrew's Church, plus recipes for two from Kyra's Kitchen. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.